but know that the bear was a ruse, that she would have to walk into the fight alone. He will be so disappointed in her when she and Jules run away to hide until Catherine is dead.
We don't have long, Luke says. If we are right, she could be in our forests in a day or two, just behind the scouts.
The room falls silent. Hank pecks at the biscuit in Arsinoe's limp fingers. We, Jules says hesitantly, we should go. Prepare.
Of course, Luke says as they stand. Take some biscuits with you, and some fish. I'm just so glad that I could give you this news. I almost wish I could go with you and fight.
He hugs her, so unafraid, confident that she will win. And Arsinoe hugs him back tightly. We'll have to go, Jules whispers as they go down the stairs. If Mirabella is coming, we have no choice but to run.
I can bring the horses around after dusk, Joseph says.
No, I ought to bring the horses. My gift will keep them calm. Arsinoe walks through the shop on wooden legs as they assure her it will not be for long, that Mirabella will turn straight around when she finds Wolf Spring empty and go for Catherine. They might be able to come back within a week. I didn't think she would attack, Arsinoe says, dazed. I told you, Jules growls, her eyes narrowed. I told you that she would. They step out of the shop, ready to separate and race off to gather supplies, but instead run face first into a gathered crowd. The shock is such that Camden hisses and paws the air at them.
What are you doing here? Arsinoe asks.
But she knows. They have come to see her off.
Luke was never very good at keeping a secret.
Will you bring the bear into the square before you go?
Someone shouts.
Go? Says Jules.
Well, you can't stay. You can't let the elemental come to Wolf Spring. She's a nightmare.
They've had lightning strikes as far west as Kenora, someone else calls out. Cows burned up in their pastures.
She'll burn our boats into the harbor looking for you.
Joseph shakes his head. He should have stayed still. Too many still hate him for saving Mirabella at Beltane. Some hate him just because he has lived too long on the mainland.
Burned up cows in Kenora, he mutters,
looking past Jules right at Arsinoe.
As if she can command storms across the island while she sits at home in Roland.
It doesn't matter, does it? Jules asks sharply. If she's coming here, they are right to be afraid.
They are, says Arsinoe. If she really means to kill me, I can't let her do it here.
Right. So we run.
No, I can't let her burn down houses looking for me. I have to find her first.
Arsinoe, what are you saying? Jules asks, but Arsinoe can barely hear her over the growing noise of the crowd. Finally, Jules shouts at the people loud enough that Arsinoe swears the planks beneath their feet quiver at the sound.
You're not ready, Jules says, and Joseph slides his hand onto her shoulder. Your bear isn't ready.
He seemed ready enough at Beltane, someone shouts, and the crowd cheers.
Jules grasps Arsinoe by the arm. Let me slow her down. Let me be your decoy.
No, Jules, you know you can't interfere.
She turns to Joseph.
Where is Billy? He should have been here. He should know.
His father sent a boat, and he sailed for home. He said he wouldn't be gone more than a couple of days.
He pauses helplessly.
If you go before he comes back, he'll never forgive himself.
He'll be fine, Arsinoe says. You'll tell him I asked about him?
Joseph nods.
I'm going to go out and meet her, Arsinoe says loudly. I'm going to keep her out of our city so she can't do any harm.
The people smile and cheer. They clap their hands. Someone demands that she bring Mirabella's body back strapped to the bear for them all to see. Something flies through the air and she catches it, a bag packed with supplies.
A change of shirt and some food, Madge says and winks. Bandages, though you won't likely need them.
Arsinoe swallows and steps down into the square,
Jules tries to pull her back, and Camden cuts in front of her to curl around her legs.
You can't. You're not ready.
It doesn't matter, Jules. I don't have any other choice.
Beneath the bent-over tree, Arsinoe sits on a small log, edging her knife with poisonous nightshade. But though the poison on the blade practically sings through her blood, she does not want to use it. She does not want to hurt Mirabella. But nor does she want to die.
It won't come to that, she says to herself. She'll see me, and I'll see her, and we'll figure this out. It'll be just like before.
She looks around beneath the tree, searching for agreement from the goddess, for some sign. The ancient sunken stones are covered over with moss, and the tree has sprouted long, strange leaves, but that is only a disguise. Here in the sacred space, where the goddess's eye is always open, the tree does not care for summer or winter or time at all. Arsinoe listens to the utter silence and wonders how much of her will be trapped here forever after she has sunk all that blood into the soil. She gets back to work, rubbing and squeezing the nightshade along the blade. The scars of her face begin to itch, and she nudges the mask onto her crown. A twig snaps behind her, and she tugs the mask quickly back down again.
You don't have to wear that thing on my account, Madrigal says, dipping prettily below the bent branches in a bright green dress.
It can't be that comfortable in the heat.
It's fine, Arsinoe says.
You like the way that people look at you in it, you mean, Madrigal says, and Arsinoe purses her lips.
I heard about Mirabella's attack. I thought I might catch up with you here.
I hoped that I would.
Why?
Because it would mean you are doing something more than walking out to face your death.
Jules is going out of her mind. Not even Joseph can calm her.
Arsinoe looks down. She hates to think of Jules that way. Panicked, afraid.
Is there anything? She asks. Anything that might help? Bring me luck? Make her attacks miss?
What a spell that would be.
There is something, though. But we will need to work fast.
Madrigal raises her brow and looks at Arsinoe's knife, and Arsinoe discreetly tucks the nightshade up into her sleeve. Madrigal will have brought her own knife anyway.
What are we doing? Arsinoe asks.
Calling your bear, Madrigal replies. The same bear that we enchanted with low magic onto the stage at the quickening. He is the only one you can hope for. And that's only if the spell we cast was strong enough to still bind you together.
Even if it was, he will never get here in time.
Perhaps not, Madrigal says. But it is worth it to try.
Very well, then. Let's have your knife.
What's wrong with the one in your hand?
I'm saving that one for my sister, she says, and Madrigal tosses hers over.
Arsinoe walks to the bent-over tree, ready to reopen the cuts in her palm, to paint the bear's rune in blood, and press it to the bark.
He might only cause more problems. He certainly did before.
He did just what he should have.
Tell that to Jules. She still holds on to that, you know? Those people he killed? Even though I was the one who got her into it. Even though she didn't do it on purpose.
Who says she didn't do it on purpose? Madrigal asks.
I saw the way that bear went straight for Queen Mirabella. You shouldn't underestimate the depth of my Jules's temper.
It grows worse and worse.
But when this ascension is over, she will calm again and we can all relax. So I'm doing this for her, and all of us, as much as for you.
Arsinoe touches the knife to her skin, and then pulls back.
Maybe I shouldn't. The low magic could go wrong again.
Madrigal rolls her eyes.
It's our fault, you know, Arsinoe says. What happened to Jules and Joseph? It was the spell that we did, that I ruined. That's what pushed him and Mirabella together.
You don't know that.
But she does. She feels it deep down.
Joseph is a man, Madrigal says, and men are changeable.
Put off their wits, they cannot resist a pretty girl on a storm-struck beach. There did not need to be low magic to cause what happened. And besides, he and Jules are back together now, and all is well, so what does it matter? She stomps her foot, and her long chestnut hair ripples in a sudden gust of wind. Now make the cuts!
Madrigal, Arsinoe asks, how did you find this place?
It was a long time ago. I had to be about 14. I was with Connor Howard. We'd gotten turned around in the woods and ended up under this tree. When I lay with him here, something inside me woke up, and I've been coming back ever since.
Connor Howard? Mr. Howard the baker? But he's so old.
Madrigal laughs. He wasn't back then. Well, not that old, anyway.
She cocks her head.
If you do not want to make the cuts, it does not always have to be blood. Sometimes you can use spit.
Spit? Arsinoe grimaces. Yuck, that's worse.
As you like. Madrigal smiles, and Arsinoe slices into her palm. The moment her blood touches the ancient bark, she feels her link to the bear pull taut and knows that he will come running.
The Stonegall Hills. The road through the Stonegall Hills is quiet. The Queen's party has not passed anyone in half a day. Scouts were sent ahead. They have been sent more and more often now that Wolf Spring is so near. The quiet makes Mirabella nervous as she sits with Bree and Elizabeth resting against an oak tree. The only bird sound is from Pepper, Elizabeth's black and white tufted woodpecker happily drilling into the wood.
It is too quiet, Mirabella says, as if the birds are silenced.
Will they do that, Elizabeth, when a naturalist queen is nearby?
I don't think so. They certainly don't do it for me.
Elizabeth tilts her head to look up fondly at her familiar.
She could ask them for quiet, but they wouldn't do it on their own.
A flock of birds with bowed heads, Bree muses. That would be some sad processional.
She sits behind Mirabella, separating the queen's long black hair into sections for a braid.
I wonder what fanfare she does have. I wonder what it is like when other queens leave their cities.
All swords clashing and shields for a war queen in Bastion, Elizabeth offers. And maybe some arrows shot into the sky or hurled with their minds.
Mirabella chuckles.
They cannot do that anymore, Elizabeth. The gift has weakened.
I don't know. Sometimes it seems that the plates hover in the air when Rose slams her fists onto the table at mealtimes.
Elizabeth wrinkles her nose and giggles. Mirabella grins as she bites into one of Bree's forbidden pears.
Not long ago, she was the chosen queen and thought that she would leave Rolinth beneath banners flying. Instead, it was in the dead of night, and no one in the towns they passed has stepped out into the road to wish her well.
She is in hiding, in secret.
And even if she was not, Arsinoe and Catarine had such strong showings at the quickening. There is no chosen queen anymore.
I cannot wait for this to be over, Bree mutters, eyeing the sweet yellow pear. When we can eat what we want and go where we want again. I am looking forward to the suitors' arrival, when perhaps Queen Catarine will be too busy entertaining to send many poisons.
Bree stops short, and Elizabeth looks at her sharply.
It is all right, Mirabella says. It is not as if she does not know that none of the suitors requested first court.
It does not matter anyway, Bree says, her chin high. We know who you really want. That handsome naturalist boy. Perhaps you can keep him as a lover after you are married.
Mirabella smiles, but she cannot imagine Joseph as a lover. He would demand all of her. He would deserve all of her. And that can never be.
The naturalist boy will never speak to me again, she says softly, after I have killed Arsinoe.
The scout returns.
Elizabeth nods up the road and gets to her feet. They are not far now from Wolf Spring and the meadows and streams where the spies say Arsinoe is often alone. It's a wonder they let her out by herself so often during an ascension year.
Naturalists are not accustomed to raising a queen with a true chance, Bree says. They do not know how to take proper care.
Perhaps they do not need to, Mirabella says, rising. With a great brown bear as their queen's familiar? The scout slows his mount and gives his report to the head of her guards, who nods. They are safe to advance again.
This close to Wolf Spring, I hoped for actual news, Mirabella says, patting Crackle on the neck and mounting.
A sighting? There have been no firm reports of the bear, and that makes me nervous.
Not the bear, but the mountain cat is often with her, Bree says. And the Malone girl.
Often, Bree hesitates.
Joseph, as well.
Mirabella's eyes flash to her, and Bree drops her gaze.
Mirabella will not harm Joseph. She has no wish to harm Joeyenne.
But if Joeyenne interferes, if she sends her cougar, then she and the cat will have to die with the queen.
Wolf Spring.
Arsinoe leaves Wolf Spring by way of the Valleywood Road. It is the most common road to the capital, a nice, wide road, covered over with trees that passes through Ashburn and Highgate on its way through the Stonegall Hills. If Luke's spy is right, she should run into Mirabella somewhere in the Ashburn Woods.
Perhaps Luke and his tailor friend were wrong, and she will walk the Valleywood all the way to Indrid Down.
But somehow, she does not think so. It is as if she can sense Mirabella advancing through the hills. She can almost smell her, like the coming of summer rain.
You can't go after her. You can't interfere.
I'm not going to interfere, Jules says. It is difficult to pack with her mother in the room. Everything Jules tries to pack, Madrigal takes back out. Her scarf, an apple, a roll of bandage. Madrigal takes them and holds them behind her back, as if that will stop Jules, as if she will not go anyway, even empty-handed.
If you're not trying to save her, then why go? Stay here, wait with us. You're not the only one who's worried.
She's my best friend, Jules says quietly. The image of Arsinoe walking away that afternoon haunts her. It was so hard to let her go, even knowing that she intended to follow.
You've been practically in my shadow since Beltane, Jules says.
Why? Because you want me to forgive you for being with Matthew?
No,
Madrigal says, her face full of hurt. But Madrigal can twist her face in an instant into any expression that she thinks will earn her the most sympathy.
Don't bother playing the concerned mother now. And don't tell me not to help. You helped plenty, teaching Arsinoe low magic.
And you assisted with the spell to charm the bear onto the stage at the quickening.
That was different. That was a show. That was not the ascension. Now it is up to her.
Now our role ends, Jules says, her lip curled. I know you haven't been here, Madrigal, but even you should have seen. Arsinoe lives or we both die, and that is always the way it was going to be.
The boards in the hall creak.
Kate appears outside the door to Jules and Arsinoe's bedroom, her gray hair tied tight at the nape of her neck, and her eyes wary.
I'm sorry for the noise, Grandma. Everything is all right.
She's going to go after the queens, Madrigal mutters. You should never have kept her here, so close to all this.
You weren't around to give an opinion,
Kate replies in her calm, deep voice.
But maybe we shouldn't have. We knew it meant heartbreak when Arsinoe would die. But that's what comes of fostering a queen.
Don't talk about her like that, Jules growls, like she's finished.
You should have sent Jules away, Madrigal says.
Away. Not to you. Jules nods.
I suppose I'm glad you're not lying and pretending you wanted me then.
She edges past her grandmother and runs down the stairs, with Camden grumbling at her heels. Kate and Madrigal wait until the front door slams before they speak again.
We should have told her, Madrigal says.
No.
She will find out anyway.
You're not blind. You've seen what's happened since the Ascension year began, how her temper grows.
The bear she killed by the bent-over tree? The one she killed without touching?
And how many broken plates have there been? How many vases knocked off tables? You tried to bind it, but it didn't work.
Madrigal, Kate says, her voice weary.
Be calm.
Madrigal laughs.
How many times have you said that to her?
Be calm. Don't worry. Control your temper.
The Oracle said that she was cursed, that she would bring about the fall of the island, and you believed her.
Kate stares at her daughter quietly. It has been a long time since anyone spoke such words aloud. But it was true. When Jules was born a blessed Beltane begot, and a girl, the first girl of a new generation of Malones, Kate sent for a seer, as was the old custom. But the moment the seer took one look at Jules, she spat upon the ground.
Drown her, she said.
She carries the Legion curse. Her naturalist gift will be touched with war.
Drown her now, before she goes mad with it.
When Madrigal refused, the seer tried to take Jules from her arms, and when she touched the baby, fell into a trance, babbling about things to come.
It must be drowned, it must not live. She is ruin and the fall.
She went on and on, eyes rolled back to the whites, and Madrigal screamed and the baby wailed, until Kate and Ellis ordered the Oracle out.
They could not drown little Jules, they would not. So they bound her Legion curse with low magic, a binding in her mother's blood.
What they did to the fleeing seer, Kate cannot bear to think about. But after it was over, they all agreed to forget.
Kate blinks at Madrigal and shakes her head.
That is not why.
You know why we bound it.
Not because she would destroy Fenburn.
Because she would destroy herself.
But she hasn't destroyed herself. She's ready now.
You are never ready. The Legion curse drives people mad.
More than one gift is too much for a mind to bear.
So they say, Madrigal counters.
But they also say that the gifts under a Legion curse are weak, and my Jules is the strongest naturalist anyone has ever seen.
Just think what her war gift might be beside it.
On the banister, Kate's crow familiar croaks and shifts angrily from foot to foot.
Madrigal was always ambitious. No doubt some part of her was excited that a child of hers had received such a prophecy.
Is that what this is about? Kate asks.
Your daughter,
being a part of this, having a great destiny.
But it is still really about you, Madrigal. You being a part of this, hoping for your own great destiny.
What an ugly thing to say, Mother. For an almost imperceptible moment, Madrigal's eyes narrow.
Anyone who knew her any less would have missed it completely. And then her eyes are wide again and imploring.
I know we had to bind it, she says gently.
Sufferers at the Legion curse were burned once. They were drowned. The council would have demanded I leave her in the woods to die.
She touches her mother on the shoulder.
But she has grown up, strong and sane.
We bound Jules's war gift for her own good, Kate says.
And
she hesitates to say what she has never wanted to believe.
As the seer was right about the Legion curse, it must have occurred to you that she could also be right about the rest of it.
That Jules will bring about the fall of the island? Madrigal scoffs.
That oracle was mad, like so many oracles before her.
Perhaps. But Madrigal, the binding will stay.
Stay. But it will not hold. It weakens even now.
I could release it if I chose.
Her blood is my blood.
I am her mother,
and I will do what I think is best.
The Ashburn Woods. When Arsinoe gets tired of walking, she stops and builds a sizable campfire by the side of the road. Mirabella's scout comes upon her as she lies beside it, her head resting on her sack of clothes. She or he is fairly good at stealth. Arsinoe does not hear them until they are so close that she does not need to shout to be heard. Of course, a truly stealthy scout would not have come so close in the first place.
"Tell my sister I'm here," Arsinoe says without moving. "Tell her I'm waiting."
"Mirabella?" Elizabeth shakes her shoulder gently. "Mira, wake up. The scout has returned." It is still too dark in the deep woods to see anything but a shape. Mirabella thought she had fallen asleep against the trunk of a tree, but as she dozed, she must have fallen over into the dirt. Her cheek is gritty with it. Somewhere to her right, Bree grumbles, and then her face is illuminated by orange flames as she lights a small pile of sticks on fire.
"Well," Bree says, her eyes puffy.
She flicks her wrist and the fire grows.
"What's so important that we must wake from our spots on the hard ground?"
The scout dismounts and takes a knee. He seems nervous, confused. "What is it?" Mirabella asks. "Is the way through to Wolf Springs barred?"
"That is unlikely," Bree yawns.
"It is Queen Arsinoe," the scout says. "She is waiting for you on the main road."
No one reacts, except for Bree, who comes fully awake and inadvertently sends her small flames rushing into the air. "How did she know we were coming?" Elizabeth wonders. "She must have better spies than we thought."
"Did you see the bear?" asks Mirabella.
"I did not. I looked for it everywhere, but not even my horse ever seemed to catch its scent."
Mirabella looks eastward. Dawn is beginning to gray through the trees. The thought of the bear is like ice in her stomach. She remembers claws and roars and screams and swallows hard.
"I will leave as soon as it is light enough to keep from tripping over roots," she says. "Do I need crackle, or is it walkable?"
"Mira," Bree and Elizabeth exclaim together. "You cannot go if we do not know where the bear is," says Bree.
"Let us scout ahead more, in the daylight."
"No," Mirabella says. "If she has hidden her bear, then she has hidden it. I will be ready." She looks at her friends' faces in the firelight and is careful not to show her own fear. She is here. It is time. Joseph travels as fast as he can along the dark, tree-covered stretch of the Valleywood Road. He is exhausted after a long day working the boats and had barely closed his eyes to sleep when Madrigal started throwing pebbles at his bedroom window. He thought he was looking for his brother Matthew, but when he opened the sash, she called to him and waved her arms. So now he is running through the dark, hoping that he has gone the right way after Jules and Camden. They do not have much of a head start, and the pain in Jules's legs may slow her down after a while. But what Madrigal told him about Jules cannot be true. That Jules is legion-cursed and touched with war? Joseph saw a legion-cursed child once, and the poor boy was half mad, holding his hands over his ears and dashing his shoulder against a wall. Joseph and Matthew had come across them in Highgate as the boy's family was traveling to Indrid Down Temple, where the boy would be mercifully poisoned and put out of his misery. That is not Jules. To hear Madrigal tell it, the low magic spell that bound Jules's curse is weakening, and the war gift may show itself any time she loses her temper. But Jules has lost her temper often, and he has seen no evidence of that. He does not know what Madrigal is up to, telling him such lies. But he went after Jules anyway, to keep her out of the Queen's business. Because if she intervenes, the Council will have her hide, legion-cursed or not. Arsinoe screams when Mirabella brings her dying campfire roaring back to life. She cannot help it. The flames are so hot. The wood is charred to embers in seconds, and when she rolls away, she smells burned hair, and her mask is so hot for a moment she fears it melted to her cheek.
You! Arsinoe sputters.
She rolls up against a tree trunk and scrambles to her feet. Mirabella is barely on the other side of the road. Arsinoe did not hear so much as a footstep or a snapped twig.
You've gotten quieter.
Perhaps you just sleep harder.
Arsinoe glances down at her makeshift pillow, singed black now, and full of lumpy clothes and hard cheese.
That's not likely.
Where is your bear?
Mirabella asks.
I left him behind.
You are lying.
Arsinoe swallows. The poisoned knife is a comforting weight in her vest, but she does not want to use it. She will have a hard time getting close enough to use it anyway. That blast of fire was no trifle. Mirabella has found her nerve.
You had better bring him out,
Mirabella warns, and a strange pulse settles over Arsinoe's skin. She looks down. The hair on her arms is standing straight up. The bolt of lightning shines bright white in the foggy morning, and the tree behind Arsinoe erupts in sparks. The jolt goes through the bottoms of her feet, and she drops into a tight crouch as it slams her teeth together. Pain rushes from her toes to the roots of her hair.
Talk, she thinks, but she can barely force her jaw apart.
So she runs instead, one leg dragging as she makes for the cover of the trees. She hurls herself over a low shrub, and Mirabella's fire eats it away behind her in an explosion of orange and hissing steam.
Stop! Stop!
Arsinoe shouts.
You had your chance to stop,
Mirabella shouts back, and you sent a bear for me instead. The wind changes direction, circling around Arsinoe's collar, tossing her hair into her eyes. Mirabella is gathering a great storm overhead. The first gust shoves Arsinoe against a tree. A branch whips into her eyes and a section of the burning shrub cracks loose and strikes her in the side, singeing a hole through her vest and shirt. She winces and looks down into the carved rune of low magic in her hand. She can feel the bear is on his way. She should have called him long ago. The next bolt of lightning knocks Arsinoe off her feet. Pain, then stars, then blackness before her eyes, and she rolls bonelessly back into the road. Jules is not far away when the first lightning strikes. The ground shakes, and the wind follows soon after. Jules and Camden start to run.
Jules, wait!
She turns. Joseph hurries toward her in a wrinkled shirt.
I can't,
Jules calls. She points to the rising smoke. Arsinoe needs them. Mirabella walks cautiously toward Arsinoe lying in the road. She holds the storm at the ready to lash out on command and keeps one eye on the woods. Her heart hammers in her chest, but so far no great brown bear has come rushing out, roaring and slashing its claws. It must be there. Arsinoe said that she left it behind, a lie. It is only waiting until Mirabella drops her guard. Arsinoe lies on her back in the road, one arm extended past her head. She is not moving. She looks like a dirty pile of twigs and rags. Mirabella nudges her with a toe.
Get up!
Arsinoe is completely still. Mirabella edges closer. Could it really be as easy as that?
Arsinoe?
She thinks she hears a mumble and flinches, looking around wildly for the bear. But still, it does not come.
What did you say?
Mirabella asks, and Arsinoe rolls over.
I said, one. Fire, lightning, wind? It would be nice if you would just choose one.
Mirabella straightens.
Just because you have only one trick does not mean I must. You don't know anything about my tricks.
Arsinoe stares up at her from behind that infuriating mask. Her nostrils are ringed with blood. Her hand twitches toward the interior of her vest. There are old cuts on her palm.
You look different.
She glances at Mirabella's brown cloak and her black hair held tight in a long braid. All dressed up for your crown. Arsinoe coughs and her eyes wobble. It is a wonder she is still conscious.
Why did you come here? Mirabella asks. Are you giving up? Do you want me to turn you into a lump of charcoal?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I wasn't raised like you were. We never made any plans, so now I just do things.
Is that right? Mirabella says through her teeth. You just do things?
Like what you did at the quickening when you sent your beast to slice me open?
Arsinoe swallows and grimaces, her teeth tinged pink with blood. Then, to Mirabella's astonishment, she actually chuckles, and her hand slides away from her vest to fall in the dirt.
You thought I sent him for you, she chuckles again. Of course you would.
You did.
Did or didn't? I haven't sent him at you today, now have I?
You tried to kill me not 2 days after I saved you, you ungrateful brat!
Mirabella clenches her fists, careful to keep control of her elements. She wants to throttle her sister, box her ears, beat every last chuckle out of her. She could strike her with lightning now and be done with it. Arsinoe is an easy, immobile target.
What are you doing here? Mirabella shouts. Why did you come out here?
To keep you out of Wolf Spring, Arsinoe replies. Away from the people I love.
I would never harm them.
They're not so sure. Ascensions turn ugly. Ascensions are ugly.
Arsinoe pauses. We could walk away.
Let Katarine and the Aarons win. The Poisoners have won 3 times before. Nothing much will change with a 4th, no matter what the temple lackeys say.
Abdicate? Mirabella barks a sad laugh. They would never let us. Stop trying to bargain when you have been beaten. You are the one who said it was the way things are. We kill or we are killed.
Arsinoe breathes in slowly. She looks at the trees and the light streaming through the clouds. Mirabella's mouth twists downward. Her eyes blur. She does not want to talk anymore. One fast bolt of lightning is all it will take, and if she looks away, maybe she will not be haunted by it afterward.
Mirabella? Arsinoe whispers. Yes?
When you go after Katarine, don't hesitate. I know she was our little girl whose hair we braided full of daisies, but she isn't anymore.
Jules, stop!
Joseph grabs Jules by the arm.
We can't stop. Can't you see that storm? Didn't you see the lightning?
Arsinoe is clever, Joseph reasons. She would never walk into this fight without a plan. Let her do it.
Let her do it? You would let her kill your Mirabella?
Or are you hoping that she'll lose? Jules jerks free, and Joseph does the only thing he can think of. He tackles her to the ground. Her response is immediate and fierce. She elbows him in the temple, and Joseph's vision swims. But he does not let go. Not even when Camden's formidable weight crashes into him and sends them all rolling.
Joseph, let me go! Let go!
No, Jules, I can't! She screams and strikes out with everything she has. The sound of their struggle has to be loud enough to reach the queens. If Arsinoe falls, at least she will know that Jules was there. Camden's teeth sink into Joseph's shoulder, and she jerks hard, trying to wrench him off.
Ah! He yelps. Jules, please!
No! She screams.
No!
It is so hard to keep his grip on her that he does not notice the quaking of the trees. He does not hear the branches rattling, not until the first one snaps and flies toward the ground to embed itself deep into the dirt. Joseph ducks his head, as more branches rain down, stabbing into the ground like knives. He lets go of Jules and covers his head with his arms. At once, the branches stop. The trees stop quaking, and the only sound is of their frightened breath and Camden's nervous groans.
"What was that?" Jules asks.
She struggles to her knees and gathers her mountain cat close, feeling all over her coat to make sure she was not cut or stabbed.
"I think," Joseph pants, "that was you."
"What was that?" Mirabella asks. "Did you hear that?"
But of course Arsinoe heard it. She knows those screams.
"That was Jules," Arsinoe says, and struggles up onto her elbow, spitting blood. "Something's happened to her. Did your priestesses do something?" Arsinoe reaches into her vest and her hand wraps around the handle of the poisoned knife. She does not want to do it. Mirabella saved her at Beltane. Mirabella loves her. But if Jules was hurt, they will all be hurt.
"No,"
Mirabella says quickly. "They would not. And they are not that way. They are there." She turns and points toward Highgate. Then she scowls. "Is this meant as distraction? It will not work."
The storm goes dark again overhead, and Arsinoe considers her options.
Perhaps she could still throw the knife, slide it into Mirabella's heart. Poisoners are naturally good at those arts, or so she has heard. But even if they are, she has never practiced.
The rune in her hand begins to burn.
A tingling rune is not much of a warning, and Arsinoe screams right along with her sister when the bear crashes through the trees onto the road. He bellows, louder even than the thunder, and his strides are as long as a horse's and just as fast.
"Wait!"
Arsinoe shouts, and the bear hesitates just enough to keep him from slashing his claws across Mirabella's chest. Mirabella falls back on her haunches, her courage broken. She scrambles away, cheeks wet with panicked tears, no doubt reliving the last moments on the quickening stage, when she watched as the bear tore apart priestesses on his way to kill her.
"Wait, wait, come to me," Arsinoe says urgently, and holds her rune hand out.
The bear is not her familiar. The charm that binds them together is only low magic. But Arsinoe is a queen. Her low magic is strong, and the bear does as she asks. She smears blood from her nose onto her palm and presses it to the great beast's forehead, and he licks her face.
"Let's go," she says.
She holds on to the bear's fur as he takes her burned shirt in his teeth and drags her down the ditch and into the cover of the trees. He is fast and shockingly quiet, and they are deep into the woodland before Mirabella recovers.
"Arsinoe,"
her sister screams.
"Where did you go? Where are you hiding?"
"She doesn't really expect me to tell her, does she?"
Arsinoe whispers, and she and the bear sink low and silent, hoping that Mirabella will not be able to find them. Greavesdrake Manor. Natalia stares down at the letter in her hand. Now and then she sips brandy, tainted with foxglove, and taps her teeth against the glass. The letter is from her brother, Kristoff. It arrived that morning, and in it he says that his son Peter returned home only briefly before departing for Prynne on a business errand. What that business entailed he could not say. He had assumed it was some errand requested by her. And she could envision the carefree shrug of his shoulders. He sends greetings and well wishes from his wife, Marguerite, who extends an invitation to their country estate as soon as Natalia's affairs with the Ascension are finished. Natalia crumples the letter in her fist. How nice it must be to live so far removed from the capital, and from the council, able to speak of the Ascension with such flippancy. Lucky Kristoff, who had married and escaped. But she had not, and his son Peter had not, and the boy had best turn up on her doorstep soon. Katerine must still be crowned. They still have work. Genevieve knocks once and enters without waiting for permission. It seems that everyone in her family is determined to make Natalia's head ache.
"I have been at the Highburn all morning," Genevieve says, referring to the hotel in the city where they will hold their welcome banquet for the suitor Nicholas Martell.
"And?" All is well. The silver is polished, the menu selected, and the flowers ordered from the hothouses.
Good,
says Natalia. They will not need to impress the boy much. Natalia remembers how he watched Katerine the night of the disembarking and at the feast afterward, and he apparently has not been dissuaded by the unsavory rumors surrounding her return. She and Peter had hoped that Katerine would have her choice of suitors, but all they really need is one, for show, until Katerine is crowned and selects Billy Chatworth to be her king consort, as she ultimately must. What is that noise? Genevieve asks. She turns and cocks her ear to the hall. Natalia does not hear anything, but when Genevieve wrenches the door open, the sound of clapping echoes up the stairs. Natalia sets down her brandy, and she and Genevieve follow the applause, past the foyer and the gallery hall, and into the billiard room, where a small crowd of servants is gathered. They slip in quietly, and when they see what has them so enraptured, Genevieve gasps. Katerine has erected a target on the far side of the tables. Her maid, Giselle, is tied to it. And as Natalia and Genevieve watch, Katerine throws 5 small knives. Each lands with an audible thump, mere inches from Giselle's arms, hips, and head. The servants applaud, and Katerine bows. She walks gaily to Giselle and kisses her cheek before ordering other servants to untie her.
What is this? Natalia asks, and Katerine whirls.
Natalia,
she exclaims, and the servants hunch their shoulders, preparing to be caught in the middle of a great argument. Natalia arches her brow at them. Since when has Katerine ever argued with Natalia, or with anyone?
Do you like it? Katerine asks. I needed a diversion, kept inside for so many days hiding from the elemental queen, and I thought the suitors might be impressed by a little sport.
A little sport? Natalia says.
They will be impressed by your riding prowess and your skill with a bow.
But I think you will find their mainland stomachs less at ease with a bride who excels at knife-throwing.
Is that so?
Katerine laughs.
Are they really so frail?
I hope not all of them, Genevieve says quietly. Katerine fixes upon her with black eyes. Since she returned, Genevieve has not dared to say much to the queen. She has only watched and reported to the council so they might whisper about how the queen is endangering herself, about how she takes in too much poison without a gift, and someday will take in the wrong one. Katerine inclines her head toward the target.
Would you care to take a turn, Genevieve? Give the servants a little thrill?
Genevieve looks at Natalia, as if hoping she will forbid it, and smiles brightly at the queen when she does not.
Of course.
She steps out of the crowd and allows Giselle and another maid to secure her wrist to the target. The mood in the room cools. All are hushed. Katerine fans out her silver knives and slides them between her fingers. She throws the first one. It strikes solidly beside Genevieve's waist, and she jerks away.
Be careful, Katerine scolds. Do not move. What if I throw another too quickly and you twitch into its path?
She throws again. This one hits so close to Genevieve's cheek that it slices off a curl of light gold hair.
I think that is enough, Kat, Natalia says. Giselle, Lucy, untie my sister, if you please. I am sure we will all enjoy more of the queen's sport at some other time.
Giselle and Lucy quickly free Genevieve's wrists. Genevieve is silent as she and the servants quit the room, but she gives Natalia a betrayed glare.
You think me cruel, Katerine says, once she and Natalia are alone.
No, Natalia replies. A little reckless. I know that Genevieve has taken a firm hand with you, Kat, but it was always in your best interests.
Katerine sighs. I suppose I should forgive her, then.
I did not know you were harboring ill will. You never have before. What has changed, Kat?
What really happened to you the night of the quickening?
Catherine wanders through the darkened room and draws the red drape away from the windows. She squints into the daylight. Her face has lost its hollows, despite her ingestion of extra poison.
Catherine looks different. She looks new.
Only what I have told you, she says. I ran away and was lost. I fell and the goddess saved me. If I am out of sorts now, it is only that I have been inside for too long.
She turns to Natalia.
Mirabella's carriage was only a decoy, was it not?
It was, and it has departed.
So perhaps that means one of your sisters is now dead.
Catherine rides Half Moon high into the hills beside Grievesdrake. She rides fast, her heels to his sides, hoping to make it to the summit and see her sister's decoy making its retreat. But when she arrives, the road is empty.
It is all right, Half Moon, she says, and pats the gelding's sweaty neck.
She knows what it must have looked like, a gaudy, overdone black carriage with silver fastenings and blue velvet cushions, the horses groomed to high polish, and every one of their white hairs covered with dye.
I wish it had not been a decoy, she says to her horse. I wish she had blown the doors off Grievesdrake and found me huddled in my bedsheets. I would have thrown a knife into her pretty white throat, and she would have been so surprised.
Catherine turns Half Moon and rides him back down from the summit. As they enter the cover of the trees, her senses prick, and she realizes they are being followed. It must be Bertrand Roman, her near-constant shadow. Natalia has sent him out after her, and it has taken him this long to catch up. She pulls Half Moon to a halt, but the hoofbeats behind them are too light to come from Bertrand's long-suffering black mare. Catherine urges Half Moon to a canter. Behind her, the pursuing rider does the same. She glances back discreetly, peeking beneath her arm, and sees a light bay horse and a male rider with a flash of blonde hair.
Peter?
She sends Half Moon flying down the path. He will not sneak up on her, and he will not overtake her. No one on the estate is a better rider than she is, and no mount in the Aaron stable can twist and cut through the trees the way Half Moon can. She loses him easily and doubles back, circling to his left. She kicks Half Moon into his path so suddenly that his mount rears up and veers off sharply, and Catherine smirks when Peter is thrown rolling across the ground. She rides to where he lies groaning in the ferns. Her mouth drops open.
You are not Peter!
The boy, who does have blonde hair but not the pale blonde of Peter and Natalia, gets slowly to his feet.
No, I am not, he says, and shakes dead leaves from the cuff of his shirt. Do you not remember me? I am Nicholas Martel.
My suitor, Catherine blurts, and for once she does not need to use the tricks Peter taught her in order to blush.
She does remember him now, but he looks different than he did far below the cliffs on the beach of the disembarking, or even across the firelight of the feast. His face in the sunlight is softened angles, and there is a pleasing curve to his lower lip. Golden blonde hair brushes against his shirt collar and curls over his temples. Catherine searches for words. She drops one side of her reins and puts her hand on her hip.
That was a stupid thing to do, sneaking up on me like that during an ascension year. I have poisoned knives. I could have killed you.
She should not be so shrill. According to Peter, mainland boys do not like it. But Nicholas smiles.
I did not mean to sneak, he says.
His accent is lilting. His voice is soft and low. She likes it immediately.
I've only just arrived.
They told me to wait at the manor house, but I'm afraid I was too curious.
That is sweet.
Someone should have stopped you.
Once I have made up my mind, I am not easy to stop.
He cocks his head as though intrigued.
You would have killed me. I thought the queens were only lethal to one another.
Then you have much to learn, Katarine says. She sighs. Though you are right that my sisters are my favorite quarry.
Forgive me, he says. It seems that I've ruined our meeting. Me face down in the dirt was not the way I wanted to introduce myself.
Katarine turns in the saddle. Let us go and find your horse. If she was from our stables, she would have been trained and would not wander far. But as it is, I do not know where she has gone to. She holds out her hand. Nicholas accepts it along with one of her stirrups and climbs onto Half Moon behind her. He slides his arms around her waist.
I thank you, he says into her ear. Perhaps this was not so bad a first meeting, after all.
Wolf Spring. Arsinoe, Jules, and Joseph leave the Valleywood Road and cut west, following the stream that joins eventually with Dogwood Pond. They sneak onto the Malone property as the sun sinks below the trees and manage to avoid the eyes and questions of people in town. Kate, Madrigal, and Ellis burst through the front door before anyone can call out. Jake the Spaniel jumps into Jules' arms, and the crow familiars flap soft, worried wings against their heads.
My goddess!
Ellis walks up and takes Arsinoe by the hand.
We'll send for a healer.
No, Arsinoe says. I'm fine. Look. As if she needed to tell them. The great brown bear is hard to miss. He's called Braddock, Arsinoe says. She places her hand atop the bear's large, furred head. Madrigal extends her arm like she might touch him, then reconsiders.
Is Mirabella dead, then?
She asks. The door slams, and a moment later Kate returns with a bowl of water already hot. She sponges off Arsinoe's face and arms, which are crusted with blood and blistering burns. Kate looks almost like she might cry, but when she speaks, her voice is like it always is.
You look like a propped-up corpse. She had better be dead.
She prods Arsinoe's bruised ribs.
You won't survive another fight like this.
She's not dead. Braddock, I don't think she had the stomach to face him again.
She will soon, says Jules in a low, tired voice.
Did you get to her at least? Madrigal asks Joseph. Joseph tightens his arm around Jules' waist and puts his chin protectively atop her head.
I got to her, he says, and I told her what you told me.
Come inside, Kate says gravely.
Those burns need tending. Braddock, I'm afraid, will have to stay out here. He's not a familiar, and even if he was, he wouldn't fit through any of the doors.
The next morning, Arsinoe wakes with her mask askew. She had been so exhausted that she fell asleep without taking it off. She straightens it and turns to Jules, who is rolled on her side facing the wall. But Camden is sitting up, her black tail tip curling up and down. Jules is awake.
It is hard to believe the things that Kate and Madrigal said last night, even though Joseph said he saw the branches break off the trees and stab into the ground.
Jules, her strong Jules, is legion-cursed, touched with war. The Malones had known and hidden it all this time, with not one word of warning. They had bound the war gift with low magic, they said. But the binding is beginning to fail. And what would happen if it tore loose completely? The Legion curse is an abomination, and the Legion cursed go mad. Everyone knows that.
Stop staring at me, Arsinoe, Jules says.
She turns over and blinks her two colored eyes. Arsinoe has always thought them pretty, one blue and one green. But Kate said the Oracle had wanted to drown Jules as soon as she saw them.
You'll be all right, Jules. You've been all right so far.
Of course I'll be all right. Jules turns and stares up at the ceiling, dark wood beams and one pretty spider web left in the east corner. Now we both have secrets. She looks at Arsinoe again.
Why didn't you tell me that you'd called the bear?
I did it after I'd left. I never thought he'd make it in time. He must have been looking for me already. She sits up in bed and peers out the window. Braddock spent the night in the yard, probably trying to figure out a way into the chicken coop.